Welcome back. It's a Monday, the 31st and final day of December and of the Roman Civil Year 2018. I'm your host, Mark Hall. And this year is rolling out on a note that's even more insane, if that's conceivable, than it began. The most viral videos on the web are snowflake meltdowns. Yeah, that's plural. And no, they're not playable, because by the time I finished editing them, there wouldn't be anything left but a bunch of bleep sounds. They'd be really loud bleeps, though. The neocons are hard at work on the president, trying to convince him not to withdraw any troops from Syria. Clearly somebody doesn't want him to be available for deployment on the southern border. And the rest of the news is weird enough that I better not even summarize it. I will note up front, though, that this is day 10 of the dreaded Big Brother government shutdown. I think it's fair to ask, has anybody noticed yet? Oh, I realize, of course, that about 90% of all the unconstitutional stuff is still going on. For example, the Mueller witch hunt is too important to shut down. So we could be forgiven for not thinking that the government shutdown is that big of a deal. But oh, wouldn't it be nice if we had a real one? But here's a story that may kind of summarize a really nutcase year. Not too long ago, it would have been something out of The Onion, or maybe Monty Python, if you're old enough to remember them. Let's try this for a headline. Dude wins Texas State girls wrestling title. As the Washington Times puts it, via the Gateway Pundit, and of course others, for the second year in a row, who could have thought it, a transgender, sick, wrestler has won the Texas Girls Class 6A 110-pound division. Mack Beggs, an 18-year-old senior from Euless Trinity High School near Dallas, entered the tournament undefeated and beat a genuine female for the title. Sick, same one he beat a year ago in the final match on Saturday. Video posted online showed a mix of cheers and boos from the crowd following the, I'm sorry, I don't know the right pronoun here, and I really don't care, the win of the wrestler whose last name is Beggs and who's taking testosterone to transition from being a girl to a boy. Guess what, folks? He, or whatever, was 56-0 last year on the mat and ended the season by winning the girls' high school wrestling tournament. Who could have thought it? You know, maybe he's figured out what the Russians figured out so many years ago in the Olympics. If you give the women enough testosterone that they look and sound and, in fact, compete like men, you can win a lot of medals. Evidently, the Russians, though, hadn't figured out the key. You have to sell it to the snowflakes as transgenderism. Then it's not cheating. No, it's politically correct. It's fine. Well, evidently that's true, at least as long as the girl wanting to be a dude doesn't put on a MAGA hat. Here's another story that only the politically correct socialist snowflakes could not have predicted. Pirates of the Caribbean, says a piece from the left-leaning, but at least basically pretty decent journalist at the Telegraph out of the UK. Venezuelans are now stalking the open seas as their socialist economy collapses. I think maybe they're being a bit generous there on the present tense use of that term. The story out of Trinidad says while the rich Caribbean fishing grounds are right on their doorstep, the villagers of Cedros in Trinidad are never short of fishermen's tales to tell, but the latest ones all have to do with not record catches of kingfish, but the fishermen themselves that have become the catch of the new pirates trying to escape the socialist workers' paradise. Again, who could have possibly imagined that history would repeat itself again? From NBC News, affecting the Sunday papers nationwide, a computer virus has hit newspapers coast to coast, said the Los Angeles Times. It's likely that the issues will affect the process of printing and delivering the Sunday newspapers as well. Other papers affected include the Chicago Tribune, New York Daily News, Baltimore Sun, and Orlando Sentinel, among lots of others, especially those owned by Tribune Publishing. But, said the company, there's no evidence that customer credit card information or other personally identifiable information has been compromised. Nevertheless, it was a cyber attack, they said, with foreign origins. Former chief of staff, and I have to say good riddance, John Kelly, has given what the Los Angeles Times called a dramatic interview. It was largely republished by the New York Times as well, in which Mr. Kelly, having left the 17-month tenure that he described as a bone-crushing hard job, is still failing to stuff a sock in it. Frequently, the papers said Kelly was known to tell aides he had the worst job in the world. Maybe that's part of the reason why he got fired. And he often told people that Mr. Trump simply wasn't up to the role of president. Well, too bad it took almost a year and a half to find out that he wasn't up to the job of chief of staff. In spite of all the negative coverage in this piece, the outgoing chief of staff did find at least one nice thing to say, or maybe refute, about the president. He did admit that the man had access to multiple streams of detailed information before making major decisions, despite what the papers call Trump's reputation. Said Kelly, "It's never been the president just wants to make a decision based on no knowledge and ignorance. You may not like his decision, but at least he was fully informed on the impact," unquote. And this is almost funny. When the Times tried to press the former chief of staff over whether there really was a security crisis at the southern border or not, or if it's just simply a president trying to stir up fears of a migrant so-called invasion, Kelly did admit, quote, "We do have an immigrant problem." And worse still, he seems to have laid the blame on immigrants themselves and lawmakers, not the Trump administration, saying that it's the, quote, crazy, oftentimes conflicting series of loopholes in the law in the United States that makes it extremely hard to turn people around and send them home. If we don't fix the laws, then they will keep coming, he continued. They have known, and they do know, that if they can get here, they can, generally speaking, stay, unquote. Here's another story that came out over the weekend that your host kind of expects isn't going to get all that much coverage either, certainly not what it deserves. This comes from Lance Johnson at Natural News, and it says AT&T intends to deliberately hoax its own customers by falsely labeling new 4G phones with the 5G icon. Of course, if you already know what they're trying to do, you don't want to buy it anyway. It's not the first time the company's tried this scam. The company, the story says, showed a 4G logo on Apple iPhones long before 4G was officially rolled out, and they too used earlier technologies that incorporated speed boosting. They're doing the same thing here, but it may be that there's a lot more to it this time. The new phones, too, to be rolled out in 2019, will have speed-boosting technologies, but the upgrades do not qualify as 5G, nor will the phones be connected to a 5G millimeter wavelength network. So, he says the new 5G, they do put a small E after it, is practically a hoax. But the key seems to be AT&T is all about deceiving customers into thinking they're connecting to a 5G network months before everyone else. And the real problem has to do with the health impacts of 5G, which are virtually universally being swept under the rug by the purveyors. T-Mobile CTO Neville Ray called out AT&T in a recent blog post, saying they're duping customers into thinking they're getting something they're not. More importantly, folks, your host suggests they're not getting something yet that these companies intend they eventually will. And that's the 5G sickness. I would call it the 5G flu, but this kind of nausea is probably going to be a lot worse than anything a mosquito might carry. Says Johnson, this deception is important because it allows the industry a chance to undermine, to soft-pedal the health risks of the coming 5G technology. Because if the technology is supposedly already in use, and hey, we haven't noticed any problems yet, then the industry can advance the new 5G technology as safe before the towers and the billions and billions of dollars of infrastructure investment are complete and the true safety impacts become obvious. Natural News' Lance Johnson notes that there have been some real-world tests, though. California firefighters who were forced to work close to newly installed 5G equipment quickly began to report confusion and memory problems, which went away once they were relocated. With longer exposures, of course, it might be a different story. And that brings me to the thing that your host has warned about for quite some time, folks. I think there's clear evidence, including their use in weaponry, that millimeter wavelengths are a genuine hazard, and that deployment on the scale that's intended here is nothing short of, well, open warfare on the populace that'll be exposed to these things long before they're told the truth about the potential, or dare I say, likely health impacts. And after all, it's not like they haven't been lied to before about everything from mercury and thimerosal in vaccines to aspartame and genetically modified frankenfoods. So when it comes to your host's comment on this latest attempt by the cell phone industry to deceive their customers, I think an analogy is most appropriate. It's a bit like a soft drink company coming out with a new product and labeling it mercury, intending to condition people or soften them up for when they put in the real poison a few months later. True confession time next, folks. I really don't like all of these year-end wrap-up, here are the top 10 news stories of 2018 and so forth stories. Sometimes, though, there are a few of them that are just too precious to pass up. Case in point, this one from Breitbart's John Nolte entitled, The 2018 Breitbart News Fake News Awards. He begins by saying, writing this was easy. Compiling it, though, was a mother. And unless you take the time to actually research the number of lies and lies and lies, and did he mention lies, that the establishment media deliberately spread last year, you can't begin to fathom just how bad things really are. By the time I was done going through the entire year, writes Nolte, I literally, no joke, had 11 pages of headlines to choose from for these awards. And do you remember the good old days when bias was the media's biggest problem? Well, as you can see below, and I'm only going to go through a few of these, folks, today's media are full-blown gangsters, liars, extortionists, and champions of violence. And at this point, literally all the man does is list some of his categories and the winners, with links to each and every single one of them, if you really want to follow them. And you know what? I've also got to be honest to the extent that I don't watch the network news. For that matter, I don't watch much TV at all, unless it's clips after the fact via the internet. So I don't even know who some of these talking heads are. And I guess I'm thankful for that, especially this time of year. So awards like this one from Nolte go right over my head. This year's chief stenographer for Democrats desperate to spread fake news smears, NBC's Casey Hunt. I don't even know who that is, and I guess I didn't miss anything. This one I've heard of, and it isn't good. 2018's biggest credibility collapse after suffering the biggest credibility collapses in 2017 and 2016. CNN, Jake, the most mistrusted journalist in America, Tapper. This one I know and have to concur. The biggest asshole. CNN's Jim Villacosta. Disgraced Watergate reporter who forgot the cover-up's worse than the crime. Yeah, you know the name. Carl Bernstein. Democrat Party's most vital ally for the 2018 midterms. Fox News. And I like this one. Such a big liar that special counsel Robert Mueller felt the need to say something. He says it's a gazillion-way tie, including McClatchy, The Daily Beast, The Guardian, Vox, The WAPO, Reuters, and The Hill. The Dan Rather Award for just making shit up. Yeah, you knew that one too. The New York Times. And the worst prediction predicted by a fake news outlet who knew it was a lie when they predicted it. Of course, folks. CNN. About the most relentless piece of fake news that's so relentless and fake that it's now white noise. Yes, you've heard it. Trump's going to fire scumbag Robert Mueller. The fact that he should doesn't mean they don't keep lying about it. Trying to stoke the outrage level for the what should be inevitable. Here are three, see if you can catch the parallels. The columnist, so shrill only dogs can hear her, award goes to the WAPO's Jennifer Rubin. How about the columnist, so dumb Forrest Gump points to her and laughs, award? WAPO's Jennifer Rubin. And the columnist who should be named Mean Girl Without Principles, award? Guess what? WAPO's Jennifer Rubin, whoever that is. This one absolutely positively has to be on the list. The rape is merely harassment when Bill Clinton is accused of it, award goes to, drumroll please, CNN's Christian Amanpour. You might be thinking the award should go to Hillary Clinton, but on the big liar scale, she's really out of the league of even the top fake news purveyors. I guess it's a bit unfair, like comparing a person who writes about baseball to Babe Ruth. I do like this one, too. The award for proving Orwell correct goes to the New York Times. Can't argue there. While the warmest embrace of domestic terrorism is a tie, going to the criminally negligent networks Chris Cuomo and Don Lemon. Oh, this fits here too, for several obvious reasons. The award for hiring the most unrepentant racist is also a tie. Same two fake news outlets. The New York Times, their big racist ought to be obvious. Notorious bigot, hypocrite, and twit, Sarah Jeong. And you probably already know before I tell you, because even I, who don't watch it, heard about this one. The criminally negligent network's big racist is Don Lemon, who famously declared that the biggest terror threat in this country, outside of CNN, of course, is white men, adding that most of them are radicalized to the right. There is no white guy ban, said this racist. So, what do we do about that? All right, well, my personal favorite in here Starting with the first runner-up is the award for manufactured outrage over a policy you didn't care about when Obama did it. And says Nolte, when I tried listing all the fake news outlets guilty of this, I ran out of internet. Leading me to, drumroll please, what I thought was the funniest of the bunch, supplying the most proof for the year that the media shouldn't be reporting on guns. The runner-up, of course, is the Clinton News Network for a genuinely full-auto fusillade of entries. But number one is the USA Today's Chainsaw Bayonet. And this one was so bad I just had to look it up. Breitbart, at least, was kind enough to keep it for us. USA Today, it says, released a video showing that available modifications for an AR-15-style rifle, which they are hell-bent on demonizing by any means necessary, includes, and I kid you not, a chainsaw bayonet. And to think, folks, some of us once believed the National Enquirer wasn't reliable. The video begins with an image of a basic AR-15 rifle captioned the Texas Church Gunman's AR-15 style rifle, whereupon they listed so many modifications, including what they admitted were either one-offs or potential prototypes, that they had to follow the video with a disclaimer stating, to clarify, the video shows both the shooter's modifications as well as other possible modifications. The shooter, however, did not use a chainsaw bayonet. And I guess you could say people with half a brain don't trust CNN or USA Today. Oh, and by the way, one of the criminally negligent network's many anti-gun entries in the proof that the media don't have a clue what real guns are like category included a segment where CNN presented the dreaded and soon-to-be, they hope, banned AR-15 as, quote, full semi-automatic, which I guess you could conclude is full semi-idiotic. Well, there's more than a bit of whimsy in all of that, of course, but the trouble is the criminally negligent network and their ilk are really serious when it comes to their inveterate racism and their attempt to make sure that when they get ready to do what South Africa's already doing this year, and that's killing white people en masse, as well as anybody else that still thinks the Constitution and the concept of God-given rights ought to apply to you peons, the victim certainly won't be able to resist physically, like with the right to keep and bear arms, or even talk about it. With that in mind, this piece from Breitbart's Alam Bukhari is a bit more serious and certainly does bear some review. In virtually any given week, he writes, in the year 2018, you could expect at least one of the following. The media would run a negative story about the president. A Democrat would complain about Russia, Russia, Russia. And a tech platform would ban or censor or lie about or all of the above, but especially censor a prominent conservative or libertarian or Christian or fill in the blank. As I've said, anybody that actually understands that there is a God, that the God who gave us life gave us liberty, and that the point of the Constitution and Bill of Rights, at least back when we had them, was to secure those rights. All three of the things he outlines, says Bukhari, are connected. The alternative media, though, which the public now relies on to debunk the hysteria of the establishment press, has faced a sustained attack by the masters of the universe in Silicon Valley, who've either banned them from their platforms or undercut their traffic with algorithm changes, or, he doesn't mention it, but I will, tried to defund them completely by the tried-and-true fascist technique of making sure their customers can't use credit cards, or make donations via the likes of PayPal or Patreon, or ultimately even buy or sell at all, and especially via the internet. All right, well, you've seen the parade of test-lying by various Silicon Valley billionaires. I won't rehash all of that. But he does note that these same Democrats who were determined to illegitimize the president's failure to abide by the rigging of the election ridicule conservative complaints of tech censorship as, oh, good grief, say it with me, a conspiracy theory, even when leaks from the same tech companies prove that it's been happening and over again. The Good Censor, an internal Google briefing leaked, says Bukhari to me earlier this year, admits point blank that the tech giants shifted towards censorship after the failure of their 2016 election rigging. It seems Google's own researchers disagree with the Democrats' defense of the company, which is to be expected. Google pays its researchers to tell the truth, but it pays congressional Democrats for other reasons. Well, though, he says you don't need leaks to discern Silicon Valley's bias. You just have to look at the tech platform's actions. In the past year alone, we've seen the following black listings, representing here only the most prominent of those to feel Silicon Valley's wrath. Here we go. Islamic critic Tommy Robinson, banned by Twitter and PayPal. The Brits, of course, never really that big on free speech anyway, did far worse than that. Investigative journalist and conservative activist Laura Loomer was banned by Twitter. I first came to know her, folks, when she was one of the few sources actually asking important questions, embarrassing questions even, which seems to have been part of the problem, concerning the false flag event there in Las Vegas. Republican consultant R.C. Maxwell was banned by Twitter. Centrist YouTuber Carl Benjamin, a.k.a. Sargon of Akkad, was banned by Patreon. Islamic critic Robert Spencer was banned also by Patreon, following pressure by credit card companies. Candace Owens, another black journalist and commentator, and that seems to make her doubly politically incorrect, was suspended by Twitter. Politically incorrect Hollywood actor James Woods was suspended for 30 days by Twitter. Oh, and note, folks, and when it comes to suspensions or threats of suspension, or, of course, the still popular and much harder to prove shadow banning, most victims, by design, won't even know what hit them. Same thing goes for their followers. A page called I Hypocrite that highlights far-left hate speech was banned by Facebook, as was Avi Yemeni, a Jewish-Australian IDF veteran and conservative activist. Mohammed Tawhidi, an anti-extremist Australian imam, was banned by Facebook, while others, like the Babylon Bee, a conservative satire site, and an activist named Terrence K. Williams, were threatened and suspended by Facebook. Gavin McInnes was banned by both Twitter and Facebook, and arguably the most famous and most hated by the knee-jerk left, certainly one of the most high-profile and thus more effective than they wanted to. Alex Jones and his multiple sites, including Prison Planet and InfoWars, were banned by Facebook, Twitter, Apple, Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Pinterest, and YouTube, all almost simultaneously and all at the urging of the lapdog Ministry of Truth corporate media. They went after a bunch of the people who worked for and with him, too, like Paul Joseph Watson and David Knight. And that, of course, was just the tip of the spear, as he likes to say, because immediately thereafter, over 800 alternative news accounts were banned by Facebook just a few weeks before the midterms. And this time they seem to have gotten it right, because hardly anybody talked about the massive election rigging, except in places like Florida's Broward County, where it was so over the top, in your face, it was almost like idiots on parade, and they took the heat for the rest of the country. So they seem to have gotten away with it. And an untold number concludes the list here of rank-and-file conservatives who evidently don't have the pull necessary to shame those evil platforms into reinstating their accounts were also silenced. There are lots and lots more, and Bukhari doesn't even list them all. People like Michael Savage have been under attack. And the censorship wasn't contained to just activists in the alternative media, either. Even mainstream politicians felt the heat. Two Facebook and Gulag refused to carry campaign ads for Senate candidate Marsha Blackburn. Doing what Twitter had done earlier, Facebook also temporarily blocked an anti-communist ad by a Republican congressional candidate in California, Elizabeth Hang, and most egregious of all, the Socialist Network blocked a midterm ad by the president just days before the November elections. GOP chairwoman Ronna McDaniel and Congressman Matt Gaetz also discovered their accounts had been suppressed in Twitter search results. And finally, even Axios reporter Jonathan Swan had to admit these revelations required him to rethink his previously held belief that tech censorship was merely a conspiracy theory. So arguably, folks, the big story of the year was yet another conspiracy theory that they've been lying about all along, and it's worse than a conspiracy fact. The year 2018's tidal wave of censorship isn't just a fact or even a tsunami. It's a harbinger of things to come. So as we wrap it up for the day and the year, whether you celebrate the secular New Year or not, have a happy one. And most importantly, make sure you stay safe. Because the big danger now isn't just drunkards on the road. Because there are snowflakes, sociopaths, and scumbags literally all over the place, especially now. And the big dangers aren't merely just negligence and ignorance. It really does matter who we serve. So know the times and the seasons. Keep your eyes open, and may Yahuwah bless you and yours.